Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're heading into the Christmas week, and in keeping with the theme, we're going to talk about the life of Jesus Christ and the historical Jesus. There's a controversial new film out. It hasn't been broadcast yet, but I think it's being featured starting tomorrow night on the Sundance Channel, and you could probably get it online if you're interested in seeing it. It's called Jesus in India. It's by Paul Davids, whom this audience probably knows pretty well from his work on the excellent film called Roswell. And he's partnered with a guy named Edward Martin to put this together. Edward Martin is the guy whose research forms the basis of this, about the missing years in Jesus's life. I guess there were some of these years where the Bible's just kind of silent on it. Nobody knows where he was from the age of 12 to about 30. So this new film proposes an answer to that question, and we're going to get into it right now. David, Paul, and Edward, thanks for joining us.
George, good to talk to you again. How are you?
It's great, great to have you here. Let's start with this, and maybe both of you take a shot at it. Is Edward there as well?
Yes, I'm right here.
Hi, Ed.
I want to start this way. Is there anything in this film, anything in this idea, because I don't want to tick off all the Christians right off the bat right before Christmas, but is there anything that is fundamentally at odds with Christian theology or the Bible and what you're proposing?
Can I start on that, George?
Go ahead, Paul.
Paul Davids. I would say there's a couple of different phases to this investigation that's covered in this movie that we worked on for about 3 years. And some of it is simply answering the omission in the Bible. Some of the early critics of the movie have accused us of revisionism, and my position has been, how do you revise something that's missing where there's nothing there? There's simply nothing in the New Testament except for one sentence that covers the ages of 12 to 30. And there's a great deal of folklore and myth and legend, but also a certain degree of evidence that Jesus did travel to the Orient. That doesn't conflict with the New Testament. As a matter of fact, I think Christians should appreciate the fact that some of the information that's available paints a picture of Jesus in India that's very, very much in character with the Jesus that we know from Judea, from Palestine, as an opponent of certain parts of Hinduism, who got into trouble there just as he did in Jerusalem when he overturned the tables of the money changers. So that's one aspect of it where I think that if Christians were of open ear and open mind and open heart, they would find this information very compelling and not threatening to the underlying belief at all. Now, there's another phase of it that comes from the Ahmadiyya Muslims. It's one particular sect of the Muslim religion, which has been ostracized by most of the other Muslims. And they adhere to the belief that Jesus did not die on the cross, that he actually survived the crucifixion. They accept the fact that he spoke to the apostles and disciples afterwards, and they believe that he came to India after that, after going to Syria, after seeing St. Paul on the road to Damascus, that he ended up in Kashmir, where he had been earlier. And we look at the evidence about this. There's a tomb there that they take very seriously as the actual tomb of Jesus, and we went there with the war going on in order to film it. And our movie doesn't say that this is a fact or true. As the New York Times said, I'm sifting through the information, the evidence, the legends, and taking a look at all of it. I'm putting out the whole platter for you, and I'm not being Michael Moore, who's trying to jam an agenda down your throat, but I'm putting it all out there and saying, take what you will from this.
Edward, the same question to you. Do you see anything that's fundamentally at odds with Christianity?
No, I do not. I believe, basically, I would agree with the things that Paul was saying, that I feel that what we're putting forth is we're trying to show a lot of different viewpoints, and incidentally, we have a very distinguished number of experts appearing in the film that, of course, our website, jesusinindiathemovie.com, that's linked up on the coast to coast.
Ed, we should say right off the bat, it is linked up with the coast to coast bios and about this show, but there's a hyphen between every word in there. So
correct.
You can't just write JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. You've got to put a hyphen between every word. But
That's right. That's right. A hyphen between the words. And what I wanted to mention is that at the bottom of the homepage of that website, you can click on the right on experts and see the array of experts that we have, really an amazing array of experts, that such as His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Shankaracharya, spiritual leader of Hindus, Professor Elaine Pagels, and many
of Princeton
other...
University.
Right.
We also have five prominent Catholics in the film representing a Catholic point of view.
That's right.
We give the Catholics every opportunity to respond to some of these claims. And the way in which they respond to it is one of the really interesting things about the film. But I think one of the most historic things about the film that is absolutely trailblazing is the fact that we succeeded in getting an interview with the Shankaracharya of the Hindu religion in Puri. This is like the Pope.
We were told it would be impossible.
We were absolutely told it would be impossible. We were told that we would probably not be able to have even our picture taken with him to prove that we were there. But all the walls came down when we got the audience with him. We explained our mission and our purpose, and he decided to talk on camera. And the things he said have never been put on the record before. I've got a few notes here, George. I just wanted to give a taste of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That the Shankaracharya insisted that Jesus had been in India, in Puri, by the Jagannath Temple where he presides. And this had been, you know, reported from various other sources. The Notovitch document, The Life of Saint Isa, the Levi Dowling, Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ. We'd heard about it from many sources, but here was essentially the Pope of Hinduism putting his reputation on the line, saying Jesus was there, he studied ethics with the Hindus there, that he was there for years before departing. He said he traveled all over India, including Kashmir, thus giving credence to some of the claims that Jesus may have ended up in.
Well, I guess the obvious question is, how does he know? That was a long time ago.
It's a good point. And we had heard from Paramahansa Yogananda's organization, Self-Realization Fellowship, some time ago, that the head of the organization now, Sri Dayamata, had met with the previous Shankaracharya.
Right.
This was, in the 70s, I believe. It was decades ago. And he had informed her that the records showing, proving that Jesus was there, were there, that he had seen them himself, and that he intended to publish it all in a book before he died. Well, he passed away before it happened. The Shankaracharya now says there's been a cover-up. He says this is all a matter of big business. It's the you know, all of the religions have these tacit understandings with each other, and they all have to stay in business. They all have their constituencies. They're all a brand, and nobody is overly stepping on anybody else's toes. I don't know whether he won't produce it because he doesn't know where the documents are, or whether, you know, he really can't. For the same reason, there are certain constraints on the Dalai Lama.
Hey, and Edward, I need to take a short break. We'll be right back, and we'll pick up that thought right where you left off. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're talking with Paul Davids and Edward Martin about their new film, Jesus in India. Edward, I'd like to start with you as we resume this conversation. What is the proof? What your research is the basis of the film. So what is the proof that this is true, that Jesus did go to India?
Let me just briefly mention, George, the location we were just talking about is the Jagannath Temple at Puri in northeastern India. And part of the proof we were just talking about, the previous Shankaracharya of Puri, who spoke with Sri Dayamata, the head of Yogananda's organization, Self-Realization Fellowship, that he confirmed that they have evidence in writing that young Jesus was a student there for about 6 years at the Jagannath Temple at Puri. Let me refer you to a document which we show a great deal about in our movie, which is a document discovered in the 1880s by Nicholas Notovitch in northwestern India, in the province of Ladakh, and he was thrown from his horse. He was recuperating for a number of weeks at the Himis Monastery, the Tibetan Buddhist Monastery. The monks became friends with him, and they volunteered to him. They said, we have a 2,000-year-old document, a written document, about young Jesus spending time in India and also being there at the Himis Monastery. That document is called The Life of St. Isa, the Best of the Sons of Men. And that document was not only seen and it was, that is,
translated by Notovitch.
Right.
Could I jump in for a second?
Yeah, go ahead, Paul. Jump in.
I just want to say that part of what we brought to this was in our trek through India, confirming everything we could about the existence of this document without actually getting our hands on it, but taking the case all the way to the Himis Monastery at 14,000 feet elevation in Ladakh.
And there have been multiple witnesses through the years.
We confirmed the multiple witnesses. We went to, Kolkata, uh-huh, which was Calcutta,
Ramakrishna Vedanta Math, the ashram of Swami Abhidhananda, who made
we absolutely confirmed, yeah, that Abhidhananda was a second witness to the document. He translated it also. The translation was almost verbatim of what had been done 30 years before. There's a trail of people that saw this through the years, and the mystery is, why won't the Himis Monastery produce the document? And we were right there, our cameras, the questions, right to the head monks of the monastery. And we got to hear their thinking about it. They neither confirm nor deny the existence now. They do discuss their concern. They don't want to be accused of a cover-up of this information if they were to suddenly pop out with it. They emphasize that no one individual there could come out with it. It would have to be done by committee. They mention the need for support from the Dalai Lama. They mentioned the fact that they had some information they had received, that the Dalai Lama was aware of the document and, as a boy, had seen it in the Marber Monastery in Tibet. Mm-hmm. But the Dalai Lama would not confirm that for us. We tried. We spent 6 months on that.
And Paul,
and we did get the Dalai Lama in our movie as well, so we hope you'll all turn in tomorrow night on the Sundance Channel and see this. It's historic.
And what is the Dalai Lama's take on the overall story? That does he say, yeah, I buy that Jesus was in India?
No, he's very cautious. He won't confirm it. What he'll say is that he's well aware of the story, but that he first heard of the story when others brought the information and story to him. And he can't confirm it, but what he feels is of utmost importance is, beyond the issue of whether Jesus was physically in India, that there are very clear common links between all the religions, and that peace in the world necessitates this mutual understanding between each of the major religions, and that many of the things that we think separate us, the Buddhists from the Muslims, from the Christians, from the Jews, to the Buddhists, many of the things we think separate us are not so vast. We're close in many ways. It's like a negotiation that just is coming close to closing, and it fails on details. And he's working so hard to bridge the gap of understanding. And until we educate ourselves better as to what each of these religions believe, we can't do it. You know, Christians don't know the extent to which Muslims revere Jesus Christ. They don't understand that he is one of their prophets. They don't call him the Son of God, but he's in the Quran. They place him on the same level as Abraham, which is common with the Jews. And, of course, they have Muhammad. But Christians don't realize that the Islam religion believes that Jesus ascended to heaven. They accept the ascension as the Christians do. Why can't we learn and hear these things that will bring us closer together? That's part of the purpose of our whole exploration, too.
You know, I read one of the articles, it was in the New York Times, the article you referenced, and it was very glowing in its description of the film and the quality of the research. And then I saw one that you sent me, Paul, from the Wall Street Journal, that was the complete opposite. Would they call your list of witnesses a cavalcade of, like,
poops? They called it a cavalcade of crackpots.
Crackpots.
George, I have to say, I just love it. I'm going to write a biography, dealing with all my films someday, and I'm going to call it the Cavalcade of Crackpots. Because I look at the body of work I've done, and they're all about the people that are called crackpots. I mean, one of my films is about Vincent van Gogh. You know, he was completely dismissed, although he was one of the greatest of all time. Jesus was completely dismissed. I told the Roswell story from the point of view of Jesse Marcel. All your listeners know this story now. He was completely dismissed as the crackpot, but he told the truth. And I did a movie about Timothy Leary, another of the crackpots, who brought us concepts of illumination we wouldn't have had any other way.
Cavalcade of Crackpots has a good alliteration to it, too.
Thank you to Nancy DeWolf Smith of the Wall Street Journal. However, I think she completely missed the point of the film. You see, as the New York Times said that this is an effort to sift through all these things that have been put on the table here. There are dozens of books out there about Jesus in India. There's all kinds of speculation. Is this just to be hidden and not discussed and never faced by Christians because they're afraid that somehow it's going to conflict with dogma? Or can we put it all out there and get a handle on what's being said and say, this makes sense, this doesn't? I was thinking about the word crackpots. You know, apart from the fact that in today's terminology, you've got two drug words there. You've got crack and you got pot. In the old terminology, it referred to like a cracked teapot, meaning it didn't hold water. So she thinks, I've got a lot of people in this movie who what they say doesn't hold water. And she doesn't mention the fact that I have two top Georgetown University professors, the top Catholic Jesuit school in the country. Professor Elaine Pagels of the Department of Religion of Princeton, just a great scholar, won so many awards. We have the Apostolic Nuncio, Corrado Balducci, Apostolic Nuncio of John Paul II, filmed at the Vatican, and we have his testimony. And on and on. So the fact that she doesn't like a few of the people who are expressing the more non-traditional views, she wants to dismiss it all as pseudo-history and lunacy, and it absolutely is not. She has.
You know, I noticed at the end of that Wall Street Journal thing, she took a UFO slam at you, I guess. The fact that you had worked on a film about UFOs in Roswell, well, that proves you must be a crackpot yourself.
Right. But you see, George, I would wear that as a badge of honor. You know, I fought the Roswell case for 15 years here. And, I feel the evidence stacks up in the favor of what people such as astronaut Edgar Mitchell are saying now. It happened. But the Wall Street Journal still wouldn't accept that. You know, neither would the New York Times. We haven't gotten to disclosure yet. So,
hey, Edward, can you tell me how you got started down this trail?
Well, as a small boy growing up in Central Texas in a small town, I was raised as a fundamentalist Christian, and when we would come to the passage in the Gospels, Luke chapter 2, verse 52, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. And then that's 14 words, and it's the only transitional passage in the New Testament that covers the missing 18 years in the life of Jesus between the ages of 12 and the age of 30 when he was being baptized by John the Baptist at the River Jordan and starting his ministry. So I would ask, where was he during the missing 18 years? What was he doing? Was he at home with Joseph in the carpentry shop making tables and chairs? What was he doing? That the rest of us have to go somewhere and to gain our knowledge by finding teachers and using books and learning and so on. And I would ask, what was Jesus doing? And the Bible school teachers would tell me, God does not want you to know. Don't even think about it.
We need to take a short break here, Edward and Paul. We'll be right back to talk more about your film, Jesus in India, right after these messages. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast. We're talking with Paul Davids and Edward Martin about their new film, Jesus in India. They explores the possibility that Jesus, somewhere between the ages of 12 and 30, went to India and learned a whole lot of stuff about Buddhism and Hinduism. And I guess the central questions would be, and this is what we'll get into when we come back after this break, why did he go and how did he get there? I mean, if he's 12 years old, how does he just take off and get to India? So we'll be getting into those and more questions, and then later on open up the phone lines for your questions here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. We're talking with Paul Davids and Edward Martin about their new film, Jesus in India. You heard my tease, fellas. I'll let Edward finish his story about how he got hooked on this subject, and then we'll go into how Jesus got there and why he went. Ed?
Well, as a youngster growing up in Texas, I was interested about India, and I could not explain why, but as a small boy growing up, I just was fascinated about films and so on about India. When I was 18 years old, I met a young man from Hopkinsville, Kentucky, who told me about Edgar Casey. And of course, we all know who that is. Some people call him the American Prophet. And the Edgar Casey material, as I started to read and find out about the Casey material, Casey in a number of his readings mentioned that Jesus had lived in India and studied there for many years. And so that was my first exposure to the concept, and it made sense to me.
Can you tell us about the Peace Corps?
Yeah. What happened when I volunteered for the Peace Corps when I graduated from the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, and I wanted to go to India. They sent me to Afghanistan, and in Afghanistan, one thing that happened was that one day I was at the American Embassy Annex, where they had a small bar. There was a kind of beer there called Murray, M-U-R-R-E-E. I asked about it, and the bartender said it's a Pakistani beer. I said, so it's named after an Englishman. He said, no, it's named after Mary. And I said, Mary's an English woman. He said, no, Mary's mother of Jesus. And I said, why would a Pakistani beer be named after the mother of Jesus? He said, her tomb, her grave is there in northern Pakistan, at a place named after her called Murray, her tomb. And I said, you're saying that the mother of Jesus Christ is buried in northern Pakistan? And most assuredly, this holy place lasts 2,000 years. So that really threw me for a loop. That was something I was not looking for.
And not prepared to believe at first either.
Oh, no.
But the point was, as the research continued,
that's right.
We found that there is this grave of Mother Mary in Murray, Pakistan, and it's been revered for 2,000 years. It's very ancient. It is now protected in a military zone with barbed wire around it and a television tower built above it, so no one can really get at it now. But researchers have entertained the possibility that if the Ahmadiyya Muslims are correct in their thesis that Jesus had a life later, that he went back to India, his mother Mary went with him, is the idea, died along the route, and that Jesus is buried in the Rosabal tomb about 100 miles away in Srinagar. And as preposterous as it may sound, and as difficult for Christians to even entertain it for a moment, there is all kinds of supporting evidence that's indicated by a number of people in the film. We're not saying it's true or that either of us accepts it, but we find it really interesting. And I think we all agree that Jesus did meet with the apostles after the crucifixion.
Yes.
And we know he sent Thomas to India.
Yes.
And Doubting Thomas. And part of our research that was so fascinating, the Christian side, as opposed to all the Buddhist and Hindu work we did, was going to Chennai, where St. Thomas had a little church, where he preached, where he introduced Christianity to India. We know this. We know he taught there 20 years. We know he was martyred there. There's a painting of it there in the little church. There's a basilica to St. Thomas. There's the tomb of St. Thomas.
John Paul II visited there.
Yes, there's photos of John Paul II paying homage to Doubting Thomas in India. So, Christians around the world, please open yourself up to the question, why did Jesus send Thomas to India? Could it be because he'd been to India before himself and he knew it, and there was a reason to send him back there and spread the gospel to the people of India? And Ed, that leads me to wanting a further explanation from you about how Jesus would have got there, because it's not so,
yeah, I mean,
not so
let's,
unusual.
Let's start with this. Why would he go? I mean, let's say he's 12 years old or 15 or 18. Why would he just pick up and decide to go to India? I know we're talking about speculation here, and how would he get there?
Several good reasons that I would put it this way. If someone is profoundly interested in spirituality, there is no place in the world like India. India is a profound place, a place where great wisdom, in my opinion, can be found. And tying in with that, the most famous and ancient trade route in the world is called the Silk Road, which is the ancient overland trade route between China and the ancient Mediterranean, and it still very much exists today. The modern designation is United Nations Highway 1, but it basically is the ancient route from, of course, for thousands of years, the Chinese had possessed the secret of how silk is made, and of course, for nobility, for wealthy families in the area of the Mediterranean, Egypt, Italy, Greece, etc., they had the money to buy silk and other expensive goods from the Orient, but especially they wanted silk. And those caravans, you could have 200, 300 people with horses and camels traveling together in big groups for security, merchants.
Took about a year, Ed, is that right?
Exactly. If you walk or travel about 10 miles a day, it takes about 1 year to get, for example, from Israel over to India. And
so 1 or 2 years, and the Life of St. Isa document tells about where he stopped and who he met along the way.
Mm-hmm.
If he had stayed in Palestine at that time, at the age of 13, Jewish boys were married,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he would have been an important catch as somebody who was already identified as someone who was making deep discourses about the Almighty, answering the questions of the rabbis in the temple in Jerusalem.
As Jesus did when he was 12 years old, and drew a lot of attention for having such wisdom.
He didn't marry, and the concept that he left and then came back much later, you know, is in accord with that. And one other very important element that our research goes into, the film goes into, is the prevalence of a Jewish population in India, especially Kashmir at that time. We trace the language, the common roots with Hebrew, the Temple of Solomon that they had in Kashmir.
Place names, culture.
Traditions.
Shape of the oars.
The Jews eat kosher food, and there's a root word that's in common between kosher and Kashmir.
Right, Kashmir.
So the concept of the Messiah as the one who would unite the lost tribes of Israel, there were only two remaining behind in Israel. You had 10 that were scattered throughout Asia. This connection to India is not at all far-fetched.
No.
Particularly when he said, I have sheep that are not of this fold.
Talk to me for a moment about the significance of this, if it is in fact true that he went there and studied and learned and maybe even preached or something.
And protested against some of their teachings as part of the tradition.
Yes, against,
that's what
know,
I wondered, is if is how this affected him, how it might have affected him in terms of a tolerance for other kinds of beliefs and religions and things of that sort.
Could I say on the one hand, there would have been a gaining of great understanding of the teachings of Hinduism and then Buddhism that grew up in India as well. Let's just make note of the fact that the rosary has 108 prayer beads. The Buddhists have 108 prayer beads. When we went to the Jagannath temple ceremony at the Rath Yatra festival, where there was the bathing of the
deities.
The representations of the deities. They use 108 pitchers of milk to bathe these deities. Why the same number is common as a holy number in Hinduism, Buddhism, and Christianity? There is a connection there.
Yes, and Jesus, in our opinion, showed respect for these other religions. And
up to a point, Ed, but then we know, if we accept the Notovitch document, that he objected to the caste system in India.
Well, let Ed finish that thought.
Yeah, that's right. That you're right. That Jesus objected to the caste system, the unfairness of the caste system. That is, that the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, the priestly class and the warrior class, tended to elevate themselves and act in a pompous way, and also that the lower caste, particular the group that called the untouchables, were treated in a horrible way, and of course Jesus stood up against that and spoke out against that, and there's even
and as a result, Ed, what happened to him?
There's a tradition that the priests, the Brahmins, hired a murderer, a professional assassin, to kill him, but that Jesus was able to escape from the assassination plot and to go away from that area to go further up north. By the way, that there was an ancient Hindu healing arts school at Benares where Jesus is supposed to have studied, and there's an healing ointment which is now called Mahami Isa. We'll talk more about that later. Incidentally,
what about the obsidian blades at the Healing Arts Center and the eye surgery and cataracts, the healing of the blind?
That's right. I was told by an eye surgeon from India who's here in the United States. He told me, did I know that young Jesus at the Hindu Healing Arts School in Benares, that 2,000 years ago, young Jesus learned how to use obsidian blades and eye-deadening solution to remove cataracts? And I said, no. I said, but that's okay with me. That is healing by physical means or by spiritual means. They're both fine with me. And may I mention, George, that my first book that I wrote after my first two trips to India, my first book is called King of Travelers, Jesus Lost Years in India, and King of Travelers refers to Jesus. And my second book, which is about the making of the film, is called Jesus in India, King of Wisdom, The Making of the Film and New Findings on Jesus Lost Years. And both of those books are available at our website, jesusinindiathemovie.com. It has the dashes in between the words.
Okay.
It's linked up there.
All right. You know, a lot of games were played by humans with the Bible, know, and things left out, things changed. I wonder if there were, do you have any indication that there were maybe an account of Jesus's life on the road that was part of the Bible at one point and pulled out?
That's a fascinating question. My understanding is that in the early Christian church, there was a mysterious document called the Logia, which Bishop Papias referred to. He wrote, I believe, four treatises on this document, Logia. The Logia document, some scholars, some New Testament scholars, consider it to be Proto-Matthew, the original book of Matthew. But this document was full of heresies. That is, Bishop Papias said that it was full of heresies. But I would refer you to someone who appears in our movie is Dr. James Deardorff.
He's had a lot of research and has a book about that too. But
correct.
If I could take it just for a second, Ed, I wanted to mention what we found at Princeton University. I'm a graduate of Princeton and made contact with Professor Elaine Pagels, who's very well known, whose books are bestsellers. One of the best known of them is Beyond Belief, The Secret Gospel of Thomas. She's an expert on the ancient scrolls that were found at Nagamadi, Egypt in 1948 that are called apocryphal gospels. They were not included in the New Testament, and they were buried to prevent them from destruction from the archbishop who opposed them and felt that they were heresy. But among them, this Gospel of Thomas includes many of the sayings of Jesus that occur in Matthew and the other Gospels, and other sayings as well. And Professor Pagels has built a case that it's an early document, not a more recent one, not 300 A.D., as some of the Orthodox Christians have tried to say and dismiss it, but that it could date back to the time of the original Gospels. And it reflects a Christianity which has many of the same sayings, but is a little different in that it reflects Eastern thought and Eastern teachings in certain ways.
And much more respectful of women.
It does mention the Divine Mother figure, mm-hmm. which is part of Hinduism, which mm-hmm. never survived in the concept of Christianity. Mm-hmm. It has the concept of reincarnation embedded into it.
Yes.
The saying about blessed is he who comes into being before he comes into being. In other words, looking for the previous life. The whole concept of the light within. In the Gospels that are part of the New Testament, we do have that if thine eye be single, thy whole body will be full of light. And the yogis interpret this as the concept that meditation on the third eye brings out the light that was within the spirit into consciousness. And this is very much of the Gospel of Thomas.
And all that stuff hit the cutting room floor.
It all hit the cutting room floor. It's not,
exactly.
It's not that they tried to destroy it. And look, George, we know that the Library of Alexandria in Egypt was destroyed. Christians objected to the heathen texts. We know that when the Spaniards conquered the Incas, the Mayas, the Aztecs, all of their ancient records
on
destroyed. Christian objection to it. These cultures that built the Great Pyramids, maybe those records would have told us how and why. They're gone. Christians at that time burned them. And there are, you know, these issues about how it is that the New Testament that we have came to be what it is, and was it changed along the way? In other words, was it elaborated on and made a little bit more miraculous as the years went by and as it was made official?
You know, a lot of Christians who believe that Jesus is the Son of God and was essentially God himself, and if he is God or Son of God, he would be all-knowing. They would argue with you that there'd be no reason for Jesus to have to go to India to learn anything since he already knows it.
Well, but if he set the Indians straight about their caste system and actually read holy texts to the underclass that were not allowed to hear them, so how much time did he spend learning and how much time did he spend influencing that culture as he influenced the Jewish culture in Palestine? So, you know, it's a complicated question. I don't think there are any simple answers to it, and I also don't think there are any final answers to it. I think these are all open and valid questions. What I object to is a mindset that cuts off the questions.
Yeah, your intent is to open the dialogue here and get people talking about it as opposed to preaching this is exactly what happened.
Yes, exactly. And I would feel no greater success for this project than if the missing manuscript of the life of St. Isa that Nicholas Notovitch saw in the 1800s would come to light and would finally see the light of day through the influence of the pressure that we've put on, because Christians have debunked this manuscript. They've denied that it even existed. They've claimed Notovitch made up the story. They've attacked it in every way they could for well, we're talking about 100 years. And those who see our film, who have a reasonable open mind, will come away feeling that we have proven that that document did exist. We've proven it. Notovitch did not make it up. It wasn't invented. We have not proven that it dates back to the time of Christ. If we had it, we could get the answer to that question.
Paul, tell me about the business part of the movie here. What's being done? I know Sundance is featuring it. Then what? What happens with it?
Well, it's extraordinary how it sort of exploded. NBC Universal's International Television Division is representing the licensing of the film all around the world. And, for example, we know that there's a significant cable television deal that's been concluded for Brazil. There's a deal in place for Australia and Canada. I've heard Portugal. I think Portugal and Brazil are particularly interesting because it's two Catholic countries that have, the broadcasters have embraced the film. As I said, it has five prominent Catholics in it. So it's going to be seen around the world, and the DVD is now available at our website. You can order it, and I put an extra 80 minutes of bonus features into that DVD. There's so much more there to see than what you're going to see on television. I invite you to join us and get Ed's books, too.
Okay. Paul Davids, Edward Martin, the creators of Jesus in India, the movie. And when we come back, we'll have your questions for our guests on Coast to Coast AM.